This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Live off the record with Trivago Lang is sponsored by Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, Burger King, and Royal Star Assurance. If you feel like you make
Come, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Trivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm joined today by Mrs. Leslie Archer, who is a policy fellow in the Government and Public Policy Institute. How are you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back. And good afternoon, Bahamas.
If you want to give us a call at all on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232. Or 325-4316, 325-4316, or 325-4259, 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas Channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. So I have a number of things I want to talk to you about today, but I want to start with something. Now, when I do this, if you are someone who has decided not to take any of the COVID vaccines, I, Trivago Lang, I'm not against you. That's your choice. No problem. If you're someone who's decided to take the COVID vaccine, I'm not against you. I'm not for you. That's your choice. No problem. I have taken it. All my family members that I can influence have taken it. And so, you know where we are in terms of taking it. But I find I am really curious about an argument that people make about vaccines. And here is the argument, right? So someone will point to, those people died haven't taken the vaccine. Or they might say, some people might say those people died from the vaccine. Now, have people died from the vaccine, as in from a negative reaction to the vaccine? Honestly, I don't know, but it's probably possible. It's probably the case, right? I really don't know, but it's probably the case. But I can tell you one thing, of the billions of people that have taken the vaccine, if anyone has died because of the vaccine, it hasn't been 1% of 1% of the people who've taken the vaccine. Not 1% of 1% of the people who've taken it. Yet, people will use those marginal, very insignificant percentages. Not that the people were insignificant. My God, nobody wants to lose their life or their family's life ever, 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 no matter how small the number. But they will use that and say, oh, but look at those people who died from taking the vaccine. Now, here's where my glitch is. The same people will not see how odd that argument is when you look at the number of people who didn't take the vaccine that have died from COVID versus those who have taken the vaccine and not died from COVID. If you want to talk and point to numbers, then you have to join the numbers game. And if you're going to use numbers, you now get into the comparison game. You get into the probability game. You get into the risk proportion game. And if you get into the risk proportion game, please don't let sensible people hear you talk about number of people who died from the vaccine versus people who die not having taken the vaccine. There is no competition. Absolutely no intelligent soul can make that a reasonable argument. Not that. If you say I have a religious objection, if you say I don't have enough information, if you say the risk seems too great for me and I don't want to take it, use that one. But don't start pointing to, well, what about the people who died from the vaccine? Because you have no case to make versus people who died having not taken the vaccine versus people who took the vaccine and didn't die of COVID. As if you're trying to say to me, it's okay for thousands, yay, hundreds, yay, over a million people to die from COVID without the vaccine. That's okay. But it ain't okay that a very, very, very small number of people who took the vaccine died. But somehow you can't get that logic to penetrate the minds of some people. And that's why I know for a fact, based on any number of things I have read and studied, that some of these things have nothing to do with logic, reasoning, or anything. They have to do with our own personal convictions, which we are entitled to have. But the reason why I will argue against it is because now you start sending me your text. You start sending me your WhatsApps. Well, when you do that, you're trying to impose some thought on me. And you know what that's going to provoke, right? It's going to provoke me to throw some thoughts on you, because I'm going to say to you, your rationale and reasoning is flawed if you join the numbers game, where odds get played, where risk factors get taken into consideration, where probabilities abound. You and I are going to have an argument at that, frankly, in my own reasoning, and I imagine a lot of sensible reasoning, people's reasoning, you're not gonna win. You can't win it. It don't make sense. It just doesn't. It's like you can be afraid of flying in an airplane. You can be, because airplanes have crashed before. But the fear level you have versus driving in a car where the probability of getting in an accident and getting killed is much greater, that's irrational. It's your fear, but it's irrational, because you can't win it on the numbers game. You can win it on your personal belief and conviction game, but not on the reasoning, objective reasoning game. Am I making any sense, Leslie?
Yes, it's interesting. A lot of people I know have not taken the vaccine, and it's more an ideology than it is about the science. Definitely it is. I know a number of people who haven't. And I also think in terms of numbers, there's a fear of the unknown numbers that has driven and continues to drive some people away from taking the vaccine, in the sense that we don't know what the repercussions are going to be long term. It's similar to, I've heard some doctors speak about recently that, you know, we won't know the side effects of inhaling the dyes from the mask, because now we wear masks constantly, so we inhale these dyes that weren't necessarily meant to be inhaled, but we won't really know the effects on that they will have on our bodies or on our children for another 20 or 30 years. And so the science and the numbers of that in the long term, but it's also still a part of the ideology.
Well, you know what I say, what economists say all the time, in the long term, we're all dead anyways, right? Because here's the thing. Who knows what the impact of the newest iPhone is going to be on anybody's health? The millions and millions and millions that are sold around the world. Who knows that? Who knows what the impact of the carnation cream you bought out of the store that was just manufactured last year is going to have on your body anytime soon? And I mean, in the next 20 years, who knows that? How about the water you're drinking from the Water and Sewage Corporation? Who knows what that water they just filtered out for you is going to do for you in the next 30 years? By that logic, we should be terrified living in our world. How about the new car you just bought that was manufactured last year? It's an end-of-year car. Who knows whether that's going to fail 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Who knows that? the logic just is challenging in the face of the realities in which we live. We go and fly on these aircrafts that were just manufactured last year, the year before last. Who knows if they will default a year from now, 2 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years. We do not know. We are trusting the science and the engineering.
Which is why we probably need to invest more into our own science and engineering initiatives so we can know.
Well, we could do that, but I mean, you know, let's also be realistic though. The people who have abundantly more resources to do it than we do, abundantly more skills to do so that we do, we could be building that resource factor, and we should and could for the next 15, 20 years. But in the meantime, as the grass is growing, the cow is starving. So for me, again, I don't mind people in their private lives holding those views. But my only challenge is when you start sending me your stuff, well, you're asking me to comment. And so I'm just commenting because you sent me your stuff. I didn't send you any stuff. You sent me your stuff. Okay. All right. Now, I don't know if you hear from time to time this, Leslie, but I hear it often. I've heard it often in the last 4 years or so I've been on this show. I've heard it very often. All these new administrations come in and all they do is throw out all the stuff that the old administration do, and everybody just start from scratch. And then you have people say, oh, we don't continue on with anybody's program. And then you have people who say, oh, you know, but we always stop, review, and cancel everything and so forth and so forth. Now, so I wanted to point to some things that I thought were very interesting in light of those kinds of comments. One, are the emergency powers expired or ended that were being held by the Minnis administration? Are those powers ended? Do you know, Leslie?
I understand that I don't know the language, but the rules holding the powers in place have been changed. So the orders still stand, but the reinforcement has been canceled. I don't know how else to put that.
Okay, I was asking the question rhetorically.
Oh, okay.
Because the fact of the matter is, you invoke this clause in the Constitution under the emergency powers. You invoke it. So that's what the government invokes it. Okay? And then under it, you pass orders in the parliament by the competent authority. Okay, well, you get the power enacted in the parliament. And under that power, you pass law rules that apply to the public. But you invoke that power through the governor general. Okay? Now, so if you want to end it, you can speak with the governor general and end it. You don't have to go to parliament to do so. You can end it. Okay? It can have a life to a certain period of time and then end as it sunsets, but you can end it before that, right? Because you're the government. So it has not been ended. Now, as I listen to now Prime Minister Davis in opposition and others, they were opposed to the extension of the emergency powers. They were opposed to that. They did not support those extensions. Well, in my mind then, if you are opposed to those extensions, I would have thought that one order of business immediate would be to end those powers. That's what I would have thought. Right? Because you thought it was a breach of people's constitutional fundamental rights and so forth and so forth, and you don't need them. There are other ways to do these things that need to be done. I know the government introduced some legislation that they said would replace the need for the emergency powers. Quite frankly, I have said on this show over and over again, I really don't accept that is so, because I believe that there is under the Quarantine Act a seriously broad power that the minister has to deal with matters related to infectious diseases. Seriously broad powers, including Clause 7, Article 7 of that act. But in any event, you don't end it. So I don't say that to criticize the government that it hasn't ended. I say that to say this. If you are still holding it when you can end it, then it must mean to my mind that you think, at least for now, it makes sense to hold it. Which means then if you think it makes sense now to hold it, it had to have made sense for the Minister administration to hold it as long as while they were still holding it up to being kicked out of office. Okay, so you have to believe that holding it still makes sense if you haven't ended it, because you don't continue with things that don't make sense unless you don't have a power or authority or opportunity to end it. Now, if you tell me I didn't have the power, the authority, or the opportunity to end it, I stand corrected. But it hasn't been ended to my understanding. That's the first thing. The Minister administration had a delivery unit. It was the first such creature in the history of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, and it was borrowed from a entity established in the United Kingdom's government for their purposes, right? And that too is a new development in even their governance. The Minister administration introduced it in the Bahamas. Deanna Gardner used to be the head of that delivery unit. She was introduced to the public as the head of that unit in the Prime Minister's office. What does it do? It is supposed to look at what the government is seeking to accomplish and track and trace the extent to which it is accomplishing the things it seeks to accomplish. The Minister administration introduced that. It's kind of a quality control or monitoring and evaluation department, okay? The Brave Davis administration has not ended that. It is keeping that unit. Therefore, you have to believe that it thinks that was a good thing. So that because you wouldn't keep a bad thing. And you certainly wouldn't appoint to a bad thing a senior political personality like a Jerome Fitzgerald, now senator. Because Mr. Fitzgerald is a man with capabilities. He's a professional man. He understands government, the government's policy in particular, the PLP administration's desires, et cetera, to pursue those policies. And so you appoint somebody who's going to not only be head of that unit, but be in the Senate where he can vocalize and be able to vocalize both in the Senate and to the country what you are doing in that unit. So you have to believe that that unit was a good thing. So when people say the Minister administration did nothing good, then you have got to say, well, then the Davis administration is keeping one of those bad things that the Minister administration did, because it is keeping the delivery unit. Okay? And so it is appointed a substantial figure to it. I have no difficulty with Mr. Fitzgerald, Senator now Fitzgerald, having been so appointed. I think he's capable and competent. I think he will elevate that office in terms of his public profile and what have you. So that's not my argument at all. My argument is we say so often, there's no continuation of. When, in fact, the PLP introduced under Sir Lyndon, Junior Achievement Program, as an example, is survived under the Ingram administration, survived under the Christie, Ingram, Minister Davis, and it's just one example to show that we're talking nonsense sometimes when we say that things don't get continued, because it's not true, right? And that people didn't do any good thing. Well, if it wasn't good, why are so many administrations kept it? Why would you do that, right? So you watch and see over and over again the extent to which something once deemed, you would have thought bad, continues under a new administration, which would suggest that either both administrations like to hold bad things, or in fact, it wasn't really bad to begin with, because now there is better understanding of the good it is by the new administration. So watch this space. Watch for these continuations. For instance, Leslie talked about the program, the housing program that the government, the former administration had for professionals. Watch and see what happens to that program. We were told about, remember when the Ingram administration did the 52-week program? All kinds of criticisms. But when the Christie administration came to office, it may not have called it a 52-week program, but it was the same program, right? And so really, sometimes you have to go past the rhetoric that people have about things and actually see what they do. Take the Minnesota administration. Cuss the Christie administration about the spy bill. Come to office, and what's the first bill they pass? The spy bill. Cuss the Christie administration about introducing VAT. What's one of the first things they did when they came to office? Raise the VAT. So again, it's okay to listen to what people say, but it's very much more important to see and watch what they do, because it gives you an indication of their actual belief about a thing. And it is the thing that's going to actually impact you, whether they do or do not implement a program, whether they do or do not keep a program. But third thing in this area I want to say is this. Now, I was reading the newspaper, and one of the ministers said that right now, for now, what is happening, that was the deputy prime minister actually said this. The deputy prime minister actually said this. That what is happening now is there's a critical, that they are really reviewing contracts of the former administration. That's what they're doing, reviewing contracts of the former administration. Now I want you to hear that. I mean, this notion of reviewing, stopping and canceling was deemed a sin under the Ingram administration. Mind you, people vote for change, and then when you're reviewing something, because you can't review, you shouldn't change things you don't review. And if you change it, you're either going to cancel it or stop it, right? But so you vote for that, but then when that comes, then now you get angry because people are reviewing stuff to decide whether they want to continue it or stop it or cancel it. But the deputy prime minister said, we're reviewing contracts. That's what we're doing. We're going to review them. Do I blame them? I do not blame them. That's what you ought to do. But my God, what cussing the Ingram administration got when there was, even quoted by Moody's, the impact of these reviewing and the stopping and canceling of contracts, as if how they could put that in their language at all, it was beyond me. But that's what's happening. Again, is this where you stand depends on where you sit, and that's the principle on which we operate. That's our principles telling us that, okay, it's okay when they do it, but not okay when they do it. That is how policy gets messed up. When our ideology about things are not principled, when they're not rational across spaces and places and circumstances. Leslie, you want to say something?
I think that's the name of the game with politics. I think that's what attracts people to it, the power of rhetoric and language. And I think that's what also repels people.
It might be true for some people, but that's not true for everybody. There are people who believe that you should be principled and who believe that you ought to be rational about the things you do. And that if in fact you change your mind on something, you ought to be prepared to say, I changed my mind and here is the reason why. But it is not true that it is a fundamental character and feature of politics that people act that way. Because the truth of the matter is, politics is nothing more than the people who participate in it. And just like I can't say every lawyer is the same, or every doctor is the same, or every preacher is the same, I can't say every politician is the same. But where we do see instances where people say one thing and then do the other thing without giving any explanation for it, I think it is useful to point that out. But it's not the game. It's what some people do in their political participation. That is true.
Well, you are definitely giving food for thought, because I would have just considered it that that's what politics is. That is the image that seems to scream most loudly, I guess.
I have an opponent of mine. I have an opponent of mine paid me what I regard as one of the greatest compliments in political life. It's an opponent. He actually said this to me. He said, you know, Shivago, I have every one of your speeches. And what I notice is you don't contradict yourself. He says, you never contradict yourself. And I told him, I don't, because I have a fidelity to the things I believe. And if I change my mind, I am prepared to say so. Because I don't believe that there are any absolutes in awareness or positions that one has to take and saving and accept. You know, you have no cause to change. But so you can change your mind. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't think it's useful to simply adopt one position in the public and then adopt another position and then have no explanation for it, because it does create what you just talked about, this perception on the part of people that this is the game. And it's not. I was out of office once. When I was Minister of State, Minister for Economic Development, I had responsibility for the Department of Statistics. Therefore, all of the statistics the department produced, ultimately I had responsibility for, not that I produced them, but I have to say these were produced by a department which I was the policy director for. When I lost office, and we were in opposition at the time, that the same department produced some statistics which my colleagues in opposition disagreed with and told me, as an economist and somebody who was a minister for that department, that I should challenge those statistics. And I said to them, why? Why should I challenge them? I don't measure labor statistics in the labor results in the country. I have no basis to refute what they put out there. I accepted what they put out there when I was minister. Why would I now not accept it if I have no reason to form the basis of that non-acceptance? And they were angry with me for that. But I wasn't moving from that position, because it's not right. And I know any number of political personalities who have had very similar positions, who have gone against even their own parties because they had a view of something and didn't subscribe to it. Or if they changed their mind, they say, well, you know, I used to think this, but you know, having been exposed to this, et cetera, so forth and so forth, I believe differently. And that makes sense to do.
And you are highlighting what some would call the debate between personal ethics and organizational ethics, where you have some personal, or your personal stance, like you say, you're not one to contradict yourself because you hold some value. But sometimes you may be in an organization where the organizational ethics or of the leader stands in contradiction to yours. And some people find that difficult to navigate, you know? But I am reminded, though, of Fitzgerald. I was trying to, and I would probably do it on the break, to look at some of the policies that he may have been directly responsible for or had a hand in. But I know a lot about the, you know, like they said, he was, there was a lot of controversy surrounding his personal ethics.
And then, so I think that beckons the question that some people are wondering if his personal ethics is going to affect his professional ethics and the organization.
But he has to challenge though, and all of us have to abide by this. Allegations against you, unproven, are not truth about you. They are merely allegations about you. He was certainly caught in so far as some email exchanges are concerned. Promoting the interest of his father's companies. And I don't think anyone would disagree that if you just want to be generous on the face of it, that's not a good look. He denied that he had any involvement in those companies. He didn't get any shares from those companies. And he said he didn't get any proceeds from those companies. Now, you can believe him or don't believe him. That's really it. But no one can to this day say, here is irrefutable proof outside of his seeking to advance his father's interest, provide a new irrefutable fact that he committed any impropriety. So therefore, we cannot say as a matter of fact that he has breached any ethical principles that would have redounded to his non-qualification to be in any public office. We can't say that, right? He was Minister of Education for full 5 years. And other than the thing that I just spoke of, there wasn't anything else anybody could evidence in respect of it. And we have to be careful in our society that we speak of things in ways that reflect accurately what we know as opinion, what we know as fact, what we know as belief. And that doesn't change whether you and I or someone else might think I don't trust him, because you have a right to do that even without evidence. But in terms of whether he has done anything in fact, that's a different story. And as you said, people wonder whether, and the only correction I would have made was whether allegations of breaches of professional ethics might get in the way of his work. That's the question. And that's a legitimate something that people might raise. Right? We're going to take a break, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live. I'm here with Mrs. Leslie Archer. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time, and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
COVID-19. Do not panic. Be prepared. If you plan to travel, keep updated on travel advisories from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Be sure to wash your hands often and have travel-sized hand sanitizers and disinfecting wipes readily available. Keep your distance from persons who are coughing and sneezing. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. This can help protect you from COVID-19 infection and other respiratory diseases.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Mo's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pulled up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today. I'm here with Mrs. Leslie Archer of the Government and Public Policy Institute. And if you want to give us a call at all, the numbers to do so are as follows. You can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. WhatsApp us on 439-3043. I'm so sorry, but there was a call and I might have missed it by now. Is there still a call on the line? All right, please forgive me. We do have some text here I want to read for you. This text says, hi, but we cannot trust they are telling the truth. But tell me who you can trust is telling the truth. I mean, let's be real now. You either believe people or you don't believe them, because who you could trust is telling the truth. Do you always tell the truth? Do you always tell the truth? Really? So the one good thing about science is, and Leslie, you would know this from your own academic background, is science doesn't rely on trust. It relies on a set of rules for rigorous methodology that can help claims to withstand scrutiny, and relies on peer review, on the ability of someone's findings to be tested and reproduced in accordance with the methodology they say they use or employed to do something. And so more often than not, whereas we go and Google search something and get some YouTube video something, when you see something appearing in a peer review journal, you're talking about something that has been analyzed and scrutinized and subjected to critical review by professionals with expertise in that area, who can say, okay, we can't flaw, we observe that this is a credible, robust, authentic piece of work. Is that not true, Leslie?
It's true. It's true. I do still believe that you have a right to question the science, and I think it's actually good for science to face questioning and scrutiny, because it will strengthen the science. They will turn around and bring stronger arguments, you know, for their case. It's good to question and challenge science.
But it is the nature of the science to welcome questioning. That's why science puts forward that what we propose is a theory. Science never says this is the truth. It says this is the theory, right? Because it says what replaces a theory, a better theory, right? And so the reason why the peer review process exists is because it's saying things ought to be questioned. Things ought to be subjected to critique. But that is not to say, though, that is not to say people should run around going and say, well, you know, there's no such thing as protein and we don't need it because we should question it. I mean, that's different than saying, well, I'd like to understand this thing they call protein better and whether in fact it is required for the human body and how it works. That's a different set of questionings. Science does not submit itself to the questioning of people without any background. It just asks the people without background to ask their questions to know more about how the science works.
But well, there are some, sometimes there are some assumptions that have to be made upon which you build your theory or your arguments, because we just don't know all things. So there are some sometimes assumptions, and if we get into matters of race and vaccinations, like with the syphilis trials and things where, and with the cocaine studies in the U.S. Way back in the early 1900s, where, you know, it was assumed that because Black people had a higher tolerance level, they didn't need to have a certain type of thing, or they could be in this particular placebo group when the other white people could be in this group. And so that was an assumption that was made, upon which a lot of scientific studies about STDs and pain tolerance were made. So we continue to question, but as we learn and grow and we develop more strength and confidence in the science. So vaccines.
But Leslie, I want to be very careful. And here's what I'm saying. You carry your child to the doctor. He's just a human being, not perfect, does not have all knowledge. He's going to use his medical expertise to help your child. There is reasonable questioning for that doctor, and there's unreasonable questioning for that doctor. True or not true?
True.
Okay, so what I'm saying is, because I'm not disputing anything you're saying, but I want to be careful. I want to be careful because we have a lot of armchair Google searching, YouTube perusing medical experts out there giving people advice. I said it already. I don't care if you decide to take the vaccine or don't. That's your choice. But there has to be some respect for the professional development of people and their expertise in an area. Bloomberg News doesn't pick up the telephone and call anyone in the Bahamas about the economy of the Bahamas. They don't do that. They search out, they ask, who should we talk to? And people tell them, speak to James Smith, speak to Michael Alkides, speak to Shivago Lang, speak to John Rowe. Why do they do that? Because they are trying to get what they regard as credible information. And just, you can question anything, but I do believe though, that there has to be some checks in place on what might be a reasonable question versus what is not. That person is saying, well, how do we know they're telling the truth? Well, how you know your doctor telling the truth? How you know your lawyer telling the truth? How you know your banker tells you that your money is safe in the bank? How you know that? Why do you believe that?
Respect for education.
Yes, a respect for the professional. Like, we hire a Leslie Archer in the Government of Public Policy Institute. Why do we do that? You have gone through the rigors of a university and you have been certified by their board of directors and trustees that you acquired and met the qualifications of what that means something. That means that in the context of the information you have, that I can't just take my son who has not done that and put him in the same category. That doesn't mean he can't question you. It just does mean though, there is a difference in how I see you and what you offer as information and how I see him and what he offers as information in the same area. And that's what we have. We have to do something about this attack on expertise, this attack on data, this attack on science. No, we're not saying that they are infallible. We're just saying, hey man, come on, this is the thing that is actually giving you the quality of life that you have enjoyed for all these many hundreds of years.
But you know what I think would help that though? If you just making the information more accessible through the government for, like you say, the armchair Google experts, because a lot of the information that, perhaps, like I know some researchers, some local researchers who wanted to write some policy reports on the COVID-19 situation, but checking the health websites, the ministry, the government websites, they couldn't find some of the information. I remember one of the press conferences recently before the change of government, where they actually explained the process of getting the vaccines, that these weren't vaccines that came from any hokey pokey place, but they were sourced, they were filed, they were sent here, they were scrutinized. And when I heard Dr. McMillan explain that process, I was like, wow, this is something that should be up on the website that the community can access and look at and would help build their confidence by exposing them to this education directly, knowing that people already go onto the internet, putting it out there so that they now have this as an option to go to.
Agreed, 100%. We have a call on the line and we got like 2 minutes. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. Hello? Okay, maybe we missed them again. I'm sorry. I agree with you 100%. Being able to offer information to people does help. But also it's true. It does matter who tell you something, maybe, because you ever drink Sarah C?
Yeah.
I drink Sarah C. What in Sarah C? What would make me and you drink Sarah C? Our Grammy tell us we should drink.
Tradition, New Year's tradition.
No, but our Grammy tell us we should do it, and they said it works for some stuff. We don't know the science of it. It wasn't published anywhere, but Grammy said it works. You ever swallow Buckley's?
But I mean, I hope you're not saying that we should be satisfied with ignorance.
I'm not saying you should be satisfied. I'm just saying sometimes life ain't about the information people get. It's about really who they trust and what they believe.
We're gonna
take our news break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z-Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us. I'm here with Mrs. Leslie Archer. When we come back, we've got lots to discuss. We'll be back after this break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
You can enter to win amazing prizes like food store gift certificates, hotel stays, beach excursions, and so much more. Even if you are previously vaccinated, you can still enter to win. The COVID vaccine is free, safe, and protects you from severe COVID-19 infections. Don't delay. Get vaccinated today and enter to win. Visit www.baxbahamas.com to register.
Some of us lost our jobs, but some of us realized just how essential our jobs were to others. Some of y'all worked me dead hard, though.
Who, me?
Be the reason somebody feels welcome, seen and heard, valued in love and support.
This character day, October 20th, we are saluting our essential workers. Log on to charitodaybahamas.org to nominate a hidden hero today.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Olain, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, let me give you some numbers to do so. And I'm sorry, I'm gonna look more carefully at the prompts so that I can get your calls. Please forgive me. But you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp us on 439-3043. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We are listening to you.
Hello, good day. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Just let me say this. I want to say some things, and I would wish you would allow me to. I want to come with some of the scriptures. Now, you said, you know, you'll find it in some of the later chapters in Ezekiel. It says, the fruit leaves are for the healing of the nation.
Yes.
If you look in the Pharisee, the yellow thing, the Pharisee, that yellow thing, that's a fruit. And
okay.
Let me say this. You know, in the book of Job 34, verse 3, it says, and the air's tried words, the air's tried words as the most tasted meat. Meaning, if the most tasted meat and it isn't good, you know, you'll spit it or you wouldn't receive it. So the air's, anytime in the air's here, good words, it's a try to receive it. Now, Mr. Lang, you all run a program just saying, you know, if you have two doctors, one say you could take the vaccine. The other say do not take the vaccine because it causes cancer. It causes autism. Y'all just run a program on your show with the same thing saying that it causes that. But Mr. Lang, let me say this. In the book of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it says, speaking about the last times itself, and there shall be earthquakes, and there shall be famine, and there shall be pestilence. And Mr. Lang, pestilence is, dealing with the standard dictionary, pestilence is a disease or a plague. Pestilence is also a noxious or a malignant doctrine. Noxious means causing hurt to one's health or moral.
I respect it. I'm trying to give you the time you need to say what you're saying, but tell me what your point is in the end, though. What's the point you're making?
The point I'm making is when you see, they say, dealing with this, you see, because you have a choice. If you say that somebody wants, it tells you, if you look at in the book of Timothy chapter 4, it says, and the Spirit expressly says that in the latter times, man shall take heed to seducing doctrines and doctrines of devils. Seduce means to entice.
But sir, I hear you. I hear you. But what is your point? What is it that you want us to walk away with? What do you want us to know?
Reward. They'll give you $100 and they'll give you grocery. That's enticement, my brother.
Okay. All right. That's it? Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Appreciate your calling. Okay. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. I fully concur with your last statement as the Right Honorable Hubert Ingram would say. It's a matter of trust. Great show as usual. God bless. Okie dokie. We have some other text here, Leslie. Let me get to this text says, Davis on Ingram's Kasime cabinet. Yeah, that was one of those, matters where your stand depends on where you're sitting. Now, Prime Minister Davis, when he was in opposition, said, and this is what he said, and this was reported in the Nassau Guardian. He says, and the Prime Minister has the temerity to suggest that reducing the number of members of parliament from 41 to 38 will save money. If he was seriously concerned with saving money, he could have reduced his cabinet by half at any time and saved taxpayer literally millions of dollars. But he chose to sell the fiction of prudence while squandering money on a gutsy maid. Boy, sound good. Sound good. But the cabinet at the time was 17 members. So according to Prime Minister Now Davis then, he could have had a cabinet of 8-9 persons. And that would have been sufficient. That would have been good. Now we have a cabinet of 27. That's almost like 20 more than 87. I'm sorry, Leslie. I said it really is funny to me. Go ahead.
No, I don't understand, Mr. Lang. Can you I don't. Can you save millions of dollars by not having?
No, you cannot.
Okay.
You cannot. This cabinet now that Prime Minister Davis has will cost the Bahamian public. The cabinet now, remember, they're also some of their members of parliament and senators. So they get a $28,000 as a member of parliament a year and $16,000 as a senator a year. So that's their member of parliament senator salary. A portfolio minister, and boy, I'm going to do this again today. A portfolio minister, who we like to call the senior minister, gets a salary of $60,000 plus a what is called a duty allowance of $6,000. So in total, their salary is $66,000. That's the cabinet minister. For the work he or she does, they get a total salary of $66,000 per year. And they are not permitted to work and earn an income anywhere else. So the only monies they get is the $66,000 plus the $28,000 that they get from being a member of parliament, or the $16,000 that they get being a senator. So if you add the $28,000 to the $66,000, that's about like $94,000 a year, right? So if you multiply that 66,000 ministers of state who are ministers without portfolio, so ain't no minister of state has a portfolio, folk. A minister of state operates within the portfolio of a portfolioed minister. Again, they have responsibilities within the portfolio of a portfolioed minister, but a minister of state is precisely that, a minister without portfolio. So that minister does not get from the governor general a piece of paper that outlines all the areas in his or her portfolio. They are the minister of state, right? Now, so they get $60,000 a year. They don't get the $6,000 duty allowance. So that's the difference between them and the portfolio minister. So let's just say all of them got the $66,000, Leslie, right? So that would be 66,000 times 20, right? That'd be 66,000 times 20. That'll give you $1.32 million. That's what it costs. $1.32 million. And then you get the parliamentary secretaries, who are, there's seven of those, times $45,000 a year, that's $315,000. So $315,000 plus the $1,300,000+ is basically $1.6 million a year. So you can't save millions. You could save $1.6 million by cutting the whole crew out, but you can't cut the whole crew out because the Constitution requires you to have eight plus the prime minister at a minimum. Eight plus the prime minister. Right? So Ingram couldn't even cut the cabinet down. Well, he could have almost get there in half to get the constitutional minimum, right? So you can't save millions. And this is really something that we do, and that is done in politics by some, where you have these exaggerated claims that try to create a kind of political fodder for people to latch on to. But if a cabinet of 17 is Gussie Mae, what would you describe a cabinet of 27 as? Gusty Mae? I'm sorry, it really is something. Anyway, we have some more text here. Let me read. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Yeah, we call it Gussie Mayhem.
Hi, go ahead.
Gussie Mayhem, that's what you call it. Gussie
Mayhem.
Call
it Gussie Mayhem?
That's what it is. But Minister Lang, I want to ask you, since you were talking a lot about the Constitution, could you point me to the article in the Constitution that talks about having a Minister of State?
There is no reference to Minister of State in the cabinet. It's just Minister.
No, I mean in the Constitution, because you
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying there is none, right? No, that's just Minister. It's just Minister. Minister of State is a convention in the Westminster system to describe a minister without portfolio.
All right, fair enough. And then pretty soon we're going to have a Minister of State.
So no, you don't need a Minister of State because you call
it. No, I'm just looking at the progression of this.
I'm saying you don't need one because you already have a parliamentary secretary who is a junior minister.
But you don't need a minister because you have a permanent secretary.
No, that's not true. That's because you don't understand the difference. A permanent secretary is an administrative head of a ministry. The policy directorate, the person who decides on the direction a country takes in a particular set of government business, is the minister. Okay. And that's a person whose powers is derived from the elected persons of the country. And no permanency secretary is that.
So based on the direction the country is heading, we have had ministers who've been sending us to hell.
If that's what you think.
So, yeah, basically, you know, because we're in debt. And you talk about recurrent deficits.
Can't believe being in debt takes you to hell
because you have to pay back.
That means that half your adult population in this country going to hell. Because they're in debt.
Thanks to our ministers.
No, how you can blame a minister if I go get a mortgage for my house?
No, what I'm saying is you're saying that they're responsible for steering the policies. Well, if the banks are going to have my wife pay for the house after they collect insurance from my death, we don't need ministers because they're supposed to stop that practice.
All right, my friend, let me tell you something. Now you are talking nonsense. Now, if you want to make another point, please go ahead. But that's nonsense. Go ahead.
Have a nice day, sir.
yeah, you too. If you have a balance, on your loan because you borrowed money to build a house, a part of the condition of the mortgage is that you take out insurance, life insurance, so that if in the event you die, the bank is able to draw the balance of what is owed to them from that life insurance, which pays the house off for you. You therefore inherit the asset. How do you now turn around and treat that like a bad thing? Are you serious? What that means to me is we need to do a better job helping people to understand these financial matters, because that shows a clear misunderstanding of things. Also, let me say, you and your wife, me and my wife and all of us, we can only sign mortgage documents if we are of the age of majority, you know, which means we have to be adults. That's the only way to get the loan. You have to be an adult. So nobody hoodwinked you or me. Nobody tricked us. We had documents we could read and sign if we wished. If you signed a document, you can't come back later on and blame somebody else. That's what we call a child's play. That's what children do. They blame other people for their failings. And we can't do that as adults. We have to own our decisions and the consequences that flow from them. I'm sorry, Leslie, did you have something you wanted to mention?
No, I agree with you. I mean, I do think it's still possible to be hoodwinked into deals, but I understand the bottom line of this argument, actually comes back that we need to continue to educate our people financially.
You could be hoodwinked, but seriously.
I understand your bottom line. I
That's an important bottom line, though, because...
Mr. Lang, honestly, and I'm not standing by the caller's side, but I looked at my son's curriculum, and there's nothing about, you know, finance or, you know, the book on his list is still Jane and Peter. And I'm like, what? Like, there's no...
Well, that's true. That's true. That your education system might not do any work in that regard.
I mean, I didn't know. I myself in my 30s, and I knew very little, unfortunately.
Yeah, but Leslie, it is also true. It is also true that they didn't teach you in school about anthropos. They didn't teach you that in primary school. But you came to learn it, though. Look at all the music and things our children know from YouTube and all these other things. We can't blame the state for this, though. Come on. My kids.
No. I don't blame the state. But I think we should be better.
Yeah.
Remember when we had that meeting, when we had our staff meeting, and you asked, you said, if we could write a book, what would we want to write it on as the icebreaker? And I told you, you know, my objective is to brainwash, because things start from young. So I didn't know that from young, but I believe every child should know that from young, the information that I have, and my intent is to feed it to them from young so that they have this completely different paradigm within which they're operating as they get older. Of course, subject to change, like you said.
Oh, okay. I'm not winning this battle on personal responsibility today. I'm not going to win this battle today, but it's one I teach my children. I tell my children, listen, nobody can have your back more than you.
You should be, it's a line, personal responsibility, and you have two children that graduate with degrees in finance. I wish my parents did. I wish that they did.
Well, the difference is graduating with personal degrees in finance ain't gonna help them. Because finance teaches you some things, but boy, listen, I had an economics degree, I had financial training and all that kind of, in some things. But this money sense stuff, boy, listen to me. What them children get, they can get from their daddy, teaching them from his mistakes and his learning. So they gonna have to get some real money education that way. And you know government can give them that. They ain't gonna give them that. You know, they can give them some of it, but the balance of it. I agree. Somewhere, somehow, we have to get more and more of this literacy available to our population. This is why on this show I do so much of it. We've done a whole week of seminars on it, and people appreciated it. But you got to, if it's something important to you, you really got to dig in and try and find it yourself, as we do so many other things. So many other things we do. We find out what that song is. Cardi B singing, and we know all the words of it. Why are we so smart that way? And we don't understand money. If you can't find that information, I know lots of young people who do, though, who actually get that information themselves and are self-taught in it, because they're motivated. They're motivated not to be hoodwinked and ignorant about these things, and that's why they pursue it. They're not waiting for somebody to give it to them. You got to go and find it where you can. As we find, there are people who are self-taught in developing software, self-taught in piano playing, self-taught in guitar, because they're motivated. And so if you motivate yourself, folks, this money issue thing, you can learn that too. I promise you. You can learn.
I want to give a good example of personal responsibility. And it comes from the movie. Did you watch The Greatest Showman with Hugh Jackman?
No, I didn't actually.
Okay, in that movie, the singer was Jenny Lind. And, you know, it was based on the real story of, I mean, the entire thing wasn't real, but it was based on the story of the Circus Brothers in the States. And in real life, that feature singer, Jenny Lind, she was world renowned. She took the monies from her performance with the Hugh Jackson character, and she gave it to, she was Swedish. She gave it to her country to develop schools across our entire country. So all of the profits and proceeds, she invested it in the schools in her country. So it can just take one person with a passion to change the entire system. When we take on that personal responsibility for ourselves to develop our gift, and then also for our country to push our country forward. There you go. See, I did it. Personal.
We have a text that says, The only thing left now is for Shane and V. Alfred to resurface. Bahamians really have a short memory span. Mr. Lang, so sad. I don't know if they have a short memory span. Sometimes they care about what they care about, and sometimes they don't care about what they don't care about. This text says, great show as usual. I did not take the vaccine, not because religious reasons, but because I simply don't trust the vaccine. I have to wait to see all y'all take the vaccine and see what happens before I decide to take it. That's stupid and idiotic and ridiculous that might sound. It's my decision, yes? I'm antisocial. I'd rather try to be away from people, wear my mask, wash my hands properly, and on some occasions have to tell people to stay 13 feet away. Okay, it says, great show as usual. I think the PLP appointment of Fitzgerald is a bad look for the PLP. The slogan was, it's a new day, but I see in the same old people. Okay, you could argue that for sure. But some people might argue that for sure. This text says, I support you wholeheartedly. We lack personal responsibility in this country across the spectrum. I'm fighting this fight, but I'm going to keep fighting it. Keep fighting this fight. Somebody says here, how many cabinet members do you honestly think PM Ingram would have had to install given the reality of global COVID pandemic, rebuilding the economy in the pandemic, Dorian rebuild, Gussie Joe? If that's what you want to rely on as the reason for the big cabinet, carry on. I don't know what Ingram would have done. Ingram's not here. And Ingram ain't got nobody cabinet Gussie May. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. I find it quite interesting how you and your colleagues seek to give Mr. Fitzgerald cushion treatment and endorse an appointment of this magnitude. I think our government should be held to higher standards on both sides of the political divide. I think it's an act of disrespect knowing Mr. Fitzgerald's record, i.e. the solicitation of funds on behalf of his father and the Rubis deal that was swept under the rug. This is the standard we should be held to, sir. I see why we're no better than we are today. Now, first of all, let me be clear with you. Let me be clear with you. All right? Don't get me mixed up in your business. If you think Mr. Fitzgerald is an unethical, whatever person, you just come out and say that. You don't need my comfort to be able to say that for yourself. So you say it for yourself. What I have talked about was not Mr. Fitzgerald's appointment. One, I said he knows the PLP's policies. He is capable to do that job. And the job is a job that the former administration had held. That's what I said. I'm not commenting on Mr. Fitzgerald. You won't do that. That's your politics. Carry right on with it. Tell me but no standards, because if we started that talk, you would start raising your voice about other things in the country if that's your standard. All right? Don't get it twisted. I told y'all before, I don't know who breached what and who didn't breach what, because I don't have any evidence. But you guys around this country love to put stuff on people because you're here. So all I tell you is be careful when it comes knocking at your door. And people start saying things about you that you will say to them, well, what proof you got about that? That's all I'm saying, right? I don't know. Listen, you can't stop Mr. Davis from appointing who he appoints. If you have a problem with it, say so. But don't give me nothing but no standards. Don't tell me that. All right? We got a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lang. Good afternoon, Leslie. Mr. Lang, just a couple of points I wanted to. One, you mentioned something about the vaccine. People have a right to disagree with the vaccine, whether it's religious or otherwise. And right. I find that their concerns are legitimate. Even if I agree, I may not see nothing wrong with the vaccine. But when we are pressuring them to take it, and yet the persons who have taken it cannot be impacted adversely at all from those who may not have taken it, why are we pushing it? Then, additionally, the pharmaceuticals are not even backing it with law. They're protected. So if me as a breadwinner die as a result of taking this vaccine, my family has no recourse. My family could go into poverty. And I find that to be unfair. So if the vaccine is so, the efficacy is so great, then stand behind it and be willing to be sued. And I think more people will be open to being that. On the political side, you know, I hear people expressing their political concerns through text, and I share some of that. I mean, I can't accuse him, but only what has been there. He heard the document from the people of Marathon, and he said he was so concerned about his job. Politicians are too concerned about their interests. It's just too selfish. It should be more for their constituents. And I find that should not make him suitable for office in any regard, and he should be a pariah from those in public office. Now, he's good businessman. He's good all of those things. But it just shows that it doesn't matter. And persons who are viewing it from the outside, doesn't independent, not FNM, not PLP, they're like, man, nothing changes with these governments. No matter what happened, they're going to bring that person. They criticize the size of the cabinet one moment, then now they're loading the cabinet up. You said it doesn't cost millions, but in your own calculation, it does cost millions to have those. If you extrapolate that over 5 years, that's millions of dollars that the Bahamians are on the hook for. And I would hope that we would really be austere measures. You're an economist. I'm also a policy person. I'm wondering when I'm going to hear from you the reduction of the civil service, which is something that we really need to do. Why are we hiring 1,000 people?
But why do you need to hear from me on that? I mean, why
you're
me?
An expert.
Why
you're
me?
An expert. You're an economist.
No, but I might not agree with you that's the way to go. So why would you want to hear about from me on it?
I want to hear that. Then. I want to hear that.
Oh, I see. I understand. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll talk to you about it at some point.
And then the last one. Listen, was it you that spoke at the PLP platform when you were young in the late 80s or 90s? Because I keep remembering it's you.
No, but you're remembering wrong. It was Darren Cash who did.
Okay,
I have never spoken at a PLP convention.
Okay, all right. Sorry about that. I just wanted to be
No, there's no problem. Just correcting you.
All right.
Yeah, okay?
All right,
yeah. Have a good one. All right, so on the Jerome Fitzgerald front, Mr. Davis is going to have to deal with
if you'd like to make
the issues surrounding the reputation of Fitzgerald with the Bahamian public, just as he's going to have to deal with his stance on the Gussie May cabinet in light of what he appointed. He's going to have to deal with that, but he can appoint whoever he wishes, and he did. He did so, right? Now, you want me to get in that to say something you would say? I don't need to do that. You say it. You can say it, okay? Now, I keep hearing this notion of people pressuring people to take the vaccine. Because people urge you to take a vaccine, they're pressuring you to take a vaccine? Really? I don't know that if the government really wanted to pressure you to take the vaccine, there are ways to do it, right? There are definitely ways to do it. So that there are people who are strongly urging, yes, there are doctors and medical professionals who are strongly urging and others who are strongly urging, and they have a right to do that. They have a right to, because they believe that it protects lives and our society. And I'm with them. If you disagree with that, that's your problem. But don't say people pressuring you, because they have a belief in what they are doing that says that I'm going to urge people. If you have a belief in the riskiness of the vaccines, you can't have a strong belief if you are not out there urging people not to take it either, because all you're doing is thinking about you and yours. But you're not a citizen of the country, loving your country and your society, if you don't go there and say, no, bro, don't take that, man. Don't do that. Let me tell you all why you all shouldn't do that. Because if you had the same convictions the medical professionals who are urging people to take the vaccines have, you would do something about it. But all you're doing, all someone is doing is saying, who pressuring them? But you have a right to also advocate for the position and things that you think should hold as well. Nobody stops you from doing it. It's a free society. And there are some who are doing that, by the way. There are definitely some who are doing that. All right. Leslie, I don't know if you wanted to make a point. There are some other texts here we have to read.
I wanted to say, well, in relation to the vaccine, I mean, the fact that America is going to make it mandatory, you know, the conversation is going to shift. I think in any event with Bahamians, we're going to feel the effects of that. And respond to it. In terms of the insurance or the comment that the caller made, I know there was early on some concern that if persons died due to the vaccine, that their insurance wouldn't cover them. But I saw British American, at least for one insurance company, release statements saying that that was false, and that there are some rumors going around that aren't true about even the protections that families get financially.
He's talking about, though, he wants the pharmaceutical companies that create these vaccines, he wants them to be able to be held liable if somebody dies from taking the vaccines. That's what he would like.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? So he's saying...
I used to be the drug rep for vaccines, you know, before I...
So you should be able to tell him how that works. No pharmaceutical company could claim that anything is 100% risk-free, because there are reactions that different people can have to any medication that you take. And if some impropriety or recklessness or other kinds of things happen in your taking any drug, that's manufactured, you do have the right to go to court and file a suit. You can do that. And if the findings of the court is that the company was negligent or something like that, then you can win whatever claim you win.
Right.
So nothing stops you from doing that. A company doesn't have to say, I can be held liable in order for them to be held liable. That's like saying the food companies have to say that because we put the food on the market, if anything happened to you, we'll pay. They don't have to say that. If you could prove that their product caused you harm or life, then the courts will take care of the matter by virtue of their ruling.
I also wanted to comment broadly on Gerald's circumstance and broadly, specifically speaking to conflict of interest in the country. And I think conflict of interest needs to be addressed. Policy-wise, given the context that we are a small nation, that it's very hard for arrangements to be made without someone knowing someone or having a relationship with someone. Or do you understand what I mean? Just the nature of our society.
Yeah, for sure.
It needs to be dealt with in a face-to-face way, but also appreciating the cultural context. Because a typical conflict of interest scenario would not apply to us. You know what I mean? So that needs to be addressed. I think.
On a previous show, I indicated that the presence of conflict of interest is not a breach of conflict of interest, you know. Because you and I are always involved with conflicts of interest. We always have conflicts of interest. I use the example of a police officer by virtue of being a police officer with family and friends is always at potential conflict of interest. Always. The question is how someone acts in respect of a conflict of interest. Let me give you an example. In a company, if you're on the board of a company, you are able to do business with that company, you know. But they have disclosure and related party disclosure rules that have to govern how you operate, an arm's length rule, so that there is not the appearance or opportunity for your relationship with the company to take advantage of things such that shareholders are put at a disadvantage. So for instance, as a member of parliament, you can have and do business with the government. You can have a government contract, but you have to disclose the same, and then it has to go to parliament, and parliament has to agree that you can do this work.
And there needs to be punishment, enforceable punishment for persons who don't, because that's the other thing. People in government, there have been incidences where conflict of interest were called out. Persons didn't admit it. They were called out and identified, and there was no punishment for it.
But you can't punish me for an accusation. You can only punish me.
No, if there is conflict of interest, you did not declare it. If your responsibility is to declare it and you did not declare it, there should be some consequence to encourage trust in society and in the law.
Yeah, but my point is, now if you are amending what you said, that's one thing, but you can't.
I'm clarifying.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it. So the accusation of is not itself a breach. Now, what you're saying, and it is true, take, for instance, our disclosure rules, right? If you don't disclose, there is penalty in the law, you know. There is penalty. That's up to $10,000.
Right, so it just needs to be enforced.
Exactly, all right.
Like yes. Many other things.
Exactly, you got it. This text says, Lang, you are not smarter than anyone else. I refute that 100%. My son is 13 years old. I know he's smarter than him in some areas. And I know he's smarter than me in some areas. There's no question about that. Says, why don't you just leave the subject alone? Then none need to try to persuade the other. I'm not trying to persuade anybody about vaccines. Do you listen? Are you listening to me? I said, if you want to take the vaccine, take it. If you don't want to take the vaccine, don't take it. That was never my point.
Your point was don't message you. Foolishness.
Yeah, well, no, my point was, if you tell me that the reason you ain't taking the vaccine is because these number of people died from taking the vaccine, and then I am able to show you these number of people lived or these number of people took the vaccine and didn't die, and these number of people didn't take the vaccine and die, and it's a bigger number, I'm saying you're kind of undercutting the rationale for talking about the vaccine killing people. That's all I was saying, you know. But you see, when you're sensitive, when you're defensive, and you're scared that I might be convincing people that they should take the vaccine, then you have to come up with this argument that this person is coming up with, that I should leave it alone. No, I ain't gonna leave it alone. Why don't you be smart enough to argue against me so that I could say, you know what, that's a great point. I think I can leave that alone. This text says, Shivari, you are spot on with your comments. Because most of us don't know half the ingredients of foods we consume or effects of things we have, especially technology. But yet, and still, the vaccine is dangerous. But we all got vaccines more than 40 plus years ago. Did you question the vaccine then? Hasn't technology advanced significantly enough in the 40 plus years to make the science better? They will say to you, probably not true. This text says, I don't see where anyone died from all those things you mentioned. But we know that there are suspicions that many died and became disabled because of the vaccine. So really? Okay, here's what we're going to do. You said, I don't see where anybody died from doing all those things that I just talked about. Okay, please, I'm going to give you until the end of the show to send me your evidence of, in quote, that there are suspicions that many died. You hear that wording? There are suspicions that many died and became disabled because of the vaccines? Really? So I don't buy your explanation. If I heard anyone died from iPhone or anyone other phone, other day dialing a number, I wouldn't buy that. I wouldn't buy that phone. Really? You have not heard research related to the radiation associated with cell phones and these kinds of things causing cancer and that kind of stuff? Do you have heard people purport that such things are so? Really? Leslie, you have not heard that? Concerns about cell phone use and the possibility. I have a doctor, very, very good doctor in Grand Bahama. Lots of people know him. Sometimes they say he's a little off. But Dr. Roop is one of those people, boy, when you really, really down and you really trying to get some medical help, people will go to Dr. Roop, right? Dr. Roop will never put a cell phone. He said, don't put it close to your testicles. Don't put it close to your chest, etc. Because he says that there is a body of work that suggests that those things can be cancer causing. You haven't heard that one, sir? Leslie, you haven't heard that?
That mayonnaise tuna.
Yes, all kind of stuff.
You know, this morning I was my son's thermos, because he's back in school now, and I said, let me try and figure out how to get this thermos to stay hot longer. Come to find out, I on YouTube, you know, like you say, being a Google couch expert, that his thermos isn't BPA free, and I was like, oh man, what is BPA? So So I start doing my research and I'm like, I throw this $40 thermos away and go, that's BPA free so that he doesn't get cancer or be placed at a risk. And then, Mr. Lang, BPA is replaced with BPS or BPP. Trying to figure out, all right, I'm going to get something that says BPA free, but that only means that it has BPS, which has the same risk in it. Like, I don't know.
It could be confusing. It really can be confusing, right? Like what about the microwave info? Like what, are they safe or are they not safe? Really, like...
But here's the problem, you know, and this is where it comes down to science, because sometimes science says something is good, and then 20 years later, the science changes. And it's not good anymore.
That's the nature of science.
Healthy,
they have a questioning.
Healthy, yeah. It's a healthy conflict, I guess.
Right. Absolutely. It's the search for better knowledge. And that search isn't search to prove anything, it's to disprove things. Right? That you say that the microwaves are safe. The scientific method would not use 1,000 microwaves and know that nothing happened. It wants to find that one instance where it happened, and now you have to adjust your claim to say, okay, it's safe in this number of circumstances or that circumstance, but not. So that's why no one can say that vaccines are 100% effective or 100% risk-free. No one can say that. Anyone who says that is just going against the truth, the facts of what we now know, right? Anyway, we've got to take our final break. And when we come back, we'll read the balance of your text. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Live. Folks, I'm here with just Les Biagio. We'll be right back.
Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm.
Marsh the car. The lady run into me, Marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Have you heard about the COVID vaccine raffle? If you are vaccinated against COVID-19, you can enter to win amazing prizes like food store gift certificates, hotel stays, beach excursions, and so much more. Even if you are previously vaccinated, you can still enter to win. The COVID vaccine is free, safe, and protects you from severe COVID-19 infections. Don't delay. Get vaccinated today and enter to win. Visit www.vaxbahamas.com to register.
Cloth face masks do offer a level of protection against the spread of COVID-19, but only if worn and removed properly and used along with other preventative measures. Your hands should be clean when you put the mask on and when you take it off. Use soap and water or an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Respiratory droplets from others will stay on the outside of the mask. Do not touch the mask at all once you have it on. Remember, if you touch the front of the mask, the germs will now be on your hands. Remove the mask using the elastic or straps from behind your ears and wash your hands immediately afterwards. If your mask gets dirty or feels damp due to respiratory droplets, change it. Cloth masks should be washed after every use with soap and water. Along with using a face mask, remember to wash your hands regularly. Practice physical distancing, 6 feet apart. Avoid touching your face. Disinfect commonly touched objects and surfaces, and stay at home as much as possible. We must each do our part to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down.
Can't proclaim
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm here with Mrs. Leslie Archer of the Government and Public Policy Institute. So glad you could join us today for these remaining moments of the show. Somebody sent us a text that says, my view is this. If you're prepared to refuse to take the vaccine, then refuse medical treatment and hospitalization when you contract the virus. Less pressure on the health system would certainly help. Every last person hospitalized in PMH regret not getting the vaccine, and that's the ones who survived, period. Well, I have a similar twist on that. I say if you refuse to take the vaccine, then my recommendation is when you get ill, you should avoid dealing with those medical professionals who urge you to take the vaccine because you don't believe in taking the vaccine. Now you're getting the benefit of people protected from the disease because they took the vaccine. How about that conviction? But we know that ain't happened, so, you know.
I don't agree with that, though.
No, I'm sure you don't. I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that because that's how ridiculous it is. Because some people, there have been people who said, listen, maybe they should have, if you really believe something is bad, think about this for a minute. You believe it's bad. You don't trust the sciences. You don't trust the scientists. But you get ill. Why do you go to scientists to get remedied? Why do that? The same scientists were urging you to take the vaccine because they said it would keep you from having to come to me. Now you're ill. You're going to go to the scientist for treatment. They are the same suspicious people with untrustworthy information. How do you explain that contradiction? I just don't understand it. That's like saying, I think you are an awful preacher with untruth, but then I need spiritual advice and I go to you. How does that work? I don't believe in your science. I don't trust you. I don't trust the people like you, but I get sick and I go to you. Man, at some point we got to just say irrational is irrational.
No, Mr. Lang, but we have to remember now, medical professionals, they are, I don't know what it's called, but their key philosophy is to do no harm.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. So you say that to say what?
So I'm saying that the same logic. So persons who refuse to exercise, they eat junk food, they don't take their hypertensive or their diabetes medication, they drink soda, and then they end up in the hospital with a stroke, heart failure, diabetes. Should they not go to the doctor as well? Should they? The logic is that if this person's philosophy is to do no harm to me, then if I take the personal responsibility to make a decision that has ultimately a negative effect on me, I also can take the decision to go to someone whose mandate is to do me no more harm.
I fully understand the point you're making, but I think it misses the point that I am making. Someone who doesn't exercise because they don't have the discipline or decided not to exercise isn't saying exercise won't help you. That's not the same as saying, I don't believe not smoking will help me. I don't believe not exercising will help me. That's not what they're not saying the same thing as a person who says, I can't trust these scientists. I can't trust these vaccines and so forth and so forth. I'm saying, and I know that there's no medical doctor who took the oath that says that do no harm, who is going to refuse to treat somebody. I know that that's not going to happen. In fact, the ridiculousness of what I am asserting is in fact the point that on the one hand, there are people who are saying, I'm not taking this because I don't, and not everybody's saying the same thing now, because this is one of the things that happens too. Every person who isn't taking the vaccine isn't saying the same thing. There are some people who have medical reasons why they wouldn't take the vaccine, there are people who have legitimate lack of information sufficient that aren't taking the vaccine. That's not the people I'm talking about. I'm saying if you say to me, I don't trust these scientists, the same ones you just said, who have an oath to do no harm, why would you make an a vaccine to do harm? I'm saying when you say you don't trust them, how is it that when you get ill from the thing that could, they said could have prevented you from getting as ill or ill at all from the thing, that you go to them for treatment? At best, you should find a doctor who believes what you believe, not in vaccines, and go get treated by them. Because you and them would have consistency in belief. That's all I'm saying. And I'm saying the ridiculousness of that is precisely the point. Okay. It's just ridiculous. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. So you shouldn't let those non-vaxxers spew foolishness over the airwaves. The same Bible they read scripture from about the last days and pestilences also says in 2 Timothy 4:4, and they shall turn their ears away from the truth and will turn aside to fables. The internet is full of fables and lies. Someone once said the internet is like a publication, like a public bathroom. Like a public bathroom wall, because it will let anyone write anything on it. And you said it better than I could ever have said it. I didn't, you said it much better than I could have said it. This text says, Mr. Lang, there are many natural medicines that are cheap and have been proven effective for many years. Numerous persons are being cured. Why isn't our health authorities promoting and providing them? I wonder. You should tell me why. Why aren't you?
I was going to say that. That's why it comes back to what you were saying about personal responsibility.
Right. Because you know, but there are people who are promoting the natural herbs, and they do. See, what people don't realize is pharmaceutical medicine, have many of them have their root in the natural medicines that occur in nature, right? Because all the labs tend to do, some of them, is make synthetic versions of the stuff that occurs in nature, because at least in the factory, you can make it in greater volumes as opposed to going and uprooting 1,000 trees to do it. But it's rooted in the same science, it's rooted in the same substance that are found in the herbs to be cures. Now, are they doing as good a job as the herb might do in not having side effects? Probably not, probably not. But it's rooted in the same stuff. We got a minute, Leslie, so I'll let you wrap up.
Again, this was a good conversation in talking about conflict of interest, and you know, vaccination will continue to be a topic to be discussed. Thank you for having me here on the show.
Always, thank you. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, y'all have a great evening. I saw somebody was trying to call, but we refresh from out of time. Thank you very much for listening. We trust enough. You have a great evening. Mahaja Black is up next. God bless you. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Oh,